Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healing Circle, which is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time, and tonight our topics are going to be changing your ideas about socioeconomic status and breaking through stereotypes. So we welcome anybody's participation. And I just thought I'd start off by reading a definition of socioeconomic status for anybody that has any questions about that. Socioeconomic status is an economic and sociological combined total measure of a person's work experience and of an individual's or family's economic and social position in relation to others. It can be based on household income, earner's education, and occupation. So that's one definition that I got from Wikipedia. And I have a guest caller who brought up this topic. Her name is Eleanor. And I'm going to call on Eleanor because I'd be curious to know what motivated her to bring up the topic and what she hopes to get out of today's show. So let me bring Eleanor live. Hi, Eleanor.
Hello, Dave.
Hi there. How are you tonight, honey?
Doing pretty well.
Good.
Hello to Kat.
Hello, Eleanor. Lovely to hear from you again.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Yes.
Well,
I live
we sure
in
appreciate
a,
it.
Thank you. I live in assisted living, and it provides your basic needs. But when you are no longer able to provide your basic needs, you're sent to a nursing home. And that happened to me once while I've been here. And it was a very frightening experience. Nursing homes are warehouses. They just hold people like they're almost like they're slabs of beef. And The next step is a nursing home. And I don't want to go to a nursing home, but I don't know how I can prevent it unless I do more for myself. I'm 67. Well, I just turned 68. I'm 68 years old, and I've got to trick my destiny. I've got to do something between now and the nursing home. And I realized that wealth is a state of mind, and I don't know if I've ever had that state of mind. I grew up working class, and both my birth father and my stepfather were good advisors and good providers. But I remember when my mother was a widow, the times would often get very bad if she didn't have an employer and a best friend for a short periods of time during the week. I don't know how we would have made it. But I don't see myself as poor, and that's part of the problem, because I was working class and because my parents were such good providers and we had such unusual childhoods in the sense that we traveled abroad and we took lessons. My parents were very creative with coming up with the money for all those things. So I don't know how I can resolve this. Do you have any ideas?
Well, it sounds like you are facing a challenge here, and I liked what you were saying about how important mindset is. And I'm going to defer to Kat a little bit about that because she is a spiritual teacher and a life coach, amongst other things. But I really liked the example of your family that you painted for us, about how creative they were and how they managed to rise above their economic circumstances and provide opportunities for you as a child, that you might not have had otherwise if your parents hadn't been so frugal or so creative. And it's my... all I can do is share a little bit of my own experience around that, Eleanor. I am not a well-to-do person, although you wouldn't know it if you walked into my house. I have a lot of beautiful things. I own my own house, and it's a blessing. And I'll just briefly share my story. I was telling Kat before the show started that I had started off life on the fast track. I was a business major, a marketing major in college, and I ended up landing a very lucrative job as a sales representative and field editor for a college textbook publisher. And I rose to the top very quickly. Within the first year, I was in the top 10% of the sales force. And I worked for a company that made millionaires out of people. That was not my experience because mental health struck me down, and I could not continue with the tremendous amount of psychological pressure that I needed in order to perform the job. I really needed to be at the top of my game, and I slid way down into the pits. And you might be able to relate to that. At any rate, I did eventually become a social worker. I had to shift careers, and it was a very noble but a humbling profession, and I never made very much money at it, but I was very grateful for the opportunity. And I just led a rather frugal lifestyle and have managed to make do with my disability income, such as it is. And I have been working very diligently at starting a career as an author. I have started the career. I have yet to make money at it. But I have a vision for myself, and I see myself moving forward in a way that may be beyond my wildest dreams. And I'm letting go of notions of doubt and letting go of problems with faith and just placing it in God's hands. And I have faith that something good is going to come of this. I'm practicing patience. I have been impatient at points and frustrated and all of those things that we can fall subject to as humans. But I feel like I'm rising above that. And I don't know if that's at all helpful to you because you're in a situation that sounds somewhat scary, sounds downright scary to be faced with the prospect that you may have to go into a nursing home someday. And all I can affirm for you is that you have the power to change your destiny. We all have the power to change our destiny. It is really a mindset, I believe. And I don't know what there would be that you could do to change your economic status, but you can work at your body and do whatever needs to be done to stay strong in your body and place it in God's hands. And that's the best suggestion that I have to you. I don't know, Kat, if you would like to speak to it.
Yeah, so I hope you don't mind me saying this, David, but Eleanor, David's in his 60s as well. Now, I am not in my 60s. I'm in my 40s. But on the outside, my socioeconomic status doesn't look so flash, but I live in a middle-class home and I'm lucky to be supported by my family because I spent my adult years raising children with special needs. I've had to forge, I suppose, on the outside, an unusual career. And that career hasn't paid me massive amounts of money, but it has paid me in friendships and in education and in skill sets, and there's a lot of other things that I've gained from my career path. Money would be nice, and the pathway continues forward, and I can see the outcome will be that the money will come. So why am I saying that is that you, Eleanor, have a lifetime of skills. You have a lifetime of wisdom. You have a lifetime of knowledge. You said that you went overseas and you learned a lot while you were there. You can bring these things back. Do you have another language? Do you have art? Do you have something you can teach? Because if there is one thing I do know, it is that knowledge over products is the number one thing that people will pay for. People will pay for knowledge. And if you've got knowledge, please, this is the way forward. Teach others. Now, one of the things that we have in society in the Western world is a breakdown in family structure. We don't have, we have it more in the Eastern countries, and I can't really reflect on Africa as a continent as to whether or not those countries there have it. But we have a lot of breakdown where the grandparents are not living with their children and their grandchildren anymore. But in a lot of Eastern countries, that is the case. The grandparents still live with the children and the grandchildren. So what we have there is a societal breakdown. We actually need the grandparents involved with the children. You being a woman in her 60s have the wisdom that the children need to hear. And there are plenty of studies. I mean, you don't need a study to know. But for those people who need to know that there are studies, there are plenty of studies out there that show that interaction with children's interaction with older people is highly important for their development. But older people interacting with younger people is highly important for their mental health and their physical health. And more people who interact with younger people die healthy than older people who have no interaction with young people will often die unwell. And what I think I'm hearing you say is, I don't want to go to a nursing home where I'm going to die sick, because it's going to make me sick and it's going to give me no hope, and I'll just end up being a statistic. And as you said, it feels like you're just put in a crate and stuck in a meat market waiting to die, and I'm going to give you the basics of life. So I would encourage you to turn around and look at your life, look at what you know, and how can you give back to the community in such a way that the community will want to pay you for that time. Is there a mentoring program that you can hook into? It may be on a voluntary status in the beginning, but you don't know where that door will open, because you're a lovely person, and because of that inner beauty, people will attract to you, and then they will want to be a part of your life, and you may become involved with people who have a positive door for you to walk through. So to me, I don't see you as the end of your story. assisted living nursing home, if you were not in this conversation right now and you weren't speaking up and you weren't saying, hey, what about me, then the trajectory would most likely be nursing home. But you've had a taste of what could be and you're saying, nah, that's not for me. And I commend you for that. That is great, because you have now got the sense of drive and purpose to make the change so you don't go down that path. And I think that off the small amount that I know about you, you have a massive amount to give the world. It's about the way that you choose to realize that within yourself and then how you package that. And it can be simply just going down to a local, I don't know what's in your community, but maybe there's a local library you can get involved with that will do older folks with young kids mentoring programs. Here in Queensland, Australia, you have to get something called the Blue Card, which clears you to be able to work with children. You have to have a police check and then make sure you're not a sex offender and that you don't have a criminal record, basically. So there may be something similar in your state, in your country. Go and get that. If you can qualify for it, get it. And get into mentoring other people. Maybe you don't want to mentor real young people. Maybe you want to mentor people. Maybe you had a career that you loved and you want to mentor people in their 30s and 40s who are also in that career path. That there would be great, because that career path may involve businesses that would pay you. So you see, there isn't an end to your life. There is only a new chapter. And when we look at it like that, when you look at what you have to offer and how you can create a positive pathway that will not only help yourself, but the positive ripple effect will help so many others, you can see that it's worth getting up in the morning and finding that answer within yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. And the clarity of your saying, you've got to get up in the morning and make a road for yourself, is very practical for me, because it's very difficult for me to get up in the morning because I don't see a road for myself. And also, what you said was very clear to me about looking back and collecting those skills that I had that I may have forgotten about.
Yeah, you've got a lot of skills. You can't get to 67 and not have a lot of skills. You know, it's just not possible. Every single person, no matter how active in life or inactive in life they've had, that they've been, they will have skills, and you will have them in droves. So I'd encourage you to write a list or write your resume. And then from your resume, pick apart the roles that you did and write a list of all the skills. And think about, during your working career, what lit you up? What were the things that lit you up? So you may have had a job that bored the hell out of you, but there was one aspect of it that lit you up. That's what you need to go with. And especially if you can see that vein of gold throughout everything. Oh, you know, I hated that job, but it lit me up when I did this. And then I went and did this job, and the same thing lit me up here and here and here. That's the thing you need to go for now, because that's going to get you out of bed in the morning. That's the one thing that's going to make you passionate, or you're already passionate about. And it's the one thing people are going to believe in when you start talking about what you offer. And if they believe in you, they're going to want to hire you. They're going to want to be around you. And that's where your inner beauty shines. And when your inner beauty shines, people see it and they want to be with it.
You know, that's something I wanted to comment on, Eleanor, because you do have, you possess so much inner beauty and you have so much strength. I know more of your story than Kat does. And you have a rich heritage, as you've described, from your family and also the career path that you had for yourself when you were a younger woman. And what I was hearing Kat talking about was thinking outside the box and living in the solution instead of in the problem. It's so easy to fall into that trap. I know I have many times in my life. And, you know, it really requires a paradigm shift to get past the why me's or the to get into the what's. What can I do? How can I change it? The what's and the how's instead of the why's. So I really loved what Kat had to say, and I thought there was an awful lot of merit in that, and she had a lot of really wonderful suggestions. You know, it's interesting. I was reading a little bit more about socioeconomic status, and there was one statement that I read that kind of stuck out like a promising thumb, and that was that it's easier to improve your socioeconomic status than it is to fall down. And Kat and I had a discussion about that because there are a lot of people that have held very prominent positions that have ended up on Skid Row and that kind of thing. But, you know, I think that it's strength of spirit that really is what lifts us up and moves us forward. And a lot of people don't possess that and tend to fall into the abyss because of that. And I hear and see such a strength of spirit in you and such a desire. And I think it's so important to focus on desire and to have a vision for yourself.
Both of you are helping me so much. I feel so motivated.
That's perfect.
That's great. Kat, is there anything that you would like to share about your feelings about changing socioeconomic status? I mean, you've come up with some brilliant suggestions for Eleanor. Is there anything else as a common thread that you'd like to share?
Yeah, it's about your mindset, and you need to be feeding your mind all the time. Positive reinforcement to change your life. You must keep seeing the positive, otherwise the negative will keep you in the trap. And whether we want to admit it or not, and I said this to a woman one time, she got quite offended. Often the situation that you are in is simply an illusion, and there is an answer, and the answer requires a change within yourself in order to find it. Now, for the person that I was speaking to, she had issues with the father of her children, who, because of his behavior towards her children, child services had become involved. And they were giving her a hard time, rightly so, considering the circumstances, which I won't go into. And so she was feeling attacked on many levels because the father of her children was ostracized from the house, but was coming at her over the phone and email and text. And then the authorities were cracking down on her to keep him away, and threatening to take her children away from her if she didn't toe the line, la, la, la. So, you know, it was a very horrible situation to be in because it wasn't one of any of her making, apart from falling in love with a person who ended up being somebody she couldn't trust and that had hurt her children. So I turned around to her one day after listening to her victim statement, oh, I don't know how many times, it became a broken record. And I said, look, you're in an illusion. You're in the illusion that you have no power here, and you've entrapped yourself in this illusion, and you now need to get out of the illusion. And she was very upset with me, of course, because of all the things that were going on, and I understand that. However, the illusion was that she had no power, when in fact, she had all the power. Because the child safety was saying, basically, take back your power, come on, stop this. She could tell the father to get nutted and pick her family up, go and move into a different country or a different state, wherever. The child safety would have agreed with it. And they would have overridden his parental rights to give her whatever. So she had the power. And the answer was self-love. And the answer always is self-love. When you start to drill down into self-love, the people who are hassling you to do the right thing will back off because they can see the self-love is happening, and they will respond to the self-love. They will say, hey, you're doing well, you're doing well, you're doing well. What they're seeing is self-love. They will, you know, they will open the doors to give you what you need because of the fact that you're putting in self-love. In that sense of self-love, the dark-natured people with the black hearts who are doing the negative things begin to find no door into your life, and they fall away, and it may take years, but they will fall away because of self-love. So when we want to change our socioeconomic status, when we want to change anything in our life, we need to fall into self-love. So we can fall into depression or we can fall into self-love. That is up to you. Depression is like a dark hole in the mind. Self-love is a hole filled of light in the heart.
Mm.
And when you go into it, it's a well of light. It's a deep well. It's an eternal. It doesn't ever stop. And we need to take one step at a time. Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither was your current socioeconomic status. If you want to change that, you will have to make self-sacrifices. You will have to jump through hoops. You will have to put the effort in. You will have to meet the universe halfway or three quarters of the way. You will have to crack that illusion open wide and discard it so that you can keep moving forward. And eventually the things that you need and want in your life will begin to happen. And it may be that your living circumstances are the last thing to change, but everything else has changed because of the internal change that you've made. And I'm speaking from experience. I'm not speaking from outside or from books. I go through this too. So when I see people where they're at with their socioeconomic status, they have a decision to make. And being a life coach, I'm not there to pander to them and make them feel like they have every reason to be sad and to stay in that sadness. I'm there to say to them, I understand, I care, I acknowledge. How about we do this? Is that fair enough? I'm there to say, you need to change, and you know you need to change. Let's do this. Is that fair enough? I'm not going to hold your hand and walk you straight into the black hole and dump you in there because I can't do it in myself. If I can't do that, and Before I finish one, I have to say is the other day I was having a conversation with my second eldest son, and I became a little bit emotional because of my own life circumstances and knowing the mindsets of certain people in my life as I was growing up and as a young person, and how at that time I was not self-assured and I listened to other people, and because I did that, I walked into the face of adversity and extreme difficulties. If I had listened to myself, I would not have walked that path. And I know that, and I've never turned around to those people and blamed them. But I do know, though, and I beat myself up over those conversations I've had with them and making the decisions based on those other people's wishes. I've done that, and I've stopped doing that. But I started to feel quite upset because the circumstances that befell my life because of listening to other people's wishes about my life and not my own led me to where I am today in my current circumstances, and I'm having to work hard to get away from those circumstances into ones that I would prefer. While I was feeling upset about it, on the one hand, the emotions were coming through, and the choice then hit me to go into depression or to continue to flash the opportunities I have in front of me in my life into my mind as visual images. And so that is what I did. I let the emotions go through like a freight train, and I had those emotions for about 4 hours. I let them go through me like a freight train, and I let them come out the other end. And the entire time, especially at the acute moment that I was having the conversation, I flashed the opportunities that I had in front of me in my mind, because the subconscious mind works in imagery and archetypes. It doesn't work in words. So I let those be the dominant things that I saw instead of the darkness and the hurt and the regrets. I chose not to see them. And that is a technique that keeps you moving forward. If you can be self-aware enough to do that sort of thing, you will not fall into the black hole of depression. You'll continue to swim in the well of self-love. I'll be quiet now.
No, you said more than a mouthful. And I just wanted to pick up on a couple pieces that you talked about. I agree that self-love is the answer to everything. And what I'm hearing from you today, Eleanor, and one of the things that you're doing is that you are reaching out. And I think that's a really important form of self-love. Some people perceive that as a weakness, but it really is a strength to reach out for help of whatever kind is a loving act, and it takes more than our own selves. If we're going to move forward, we need to do it together, and we can do that with other people. We can do that with our higher power. We can do it by networking. It's taking those baby steps that Kat was referring to, and sometimes it's a couple of steps forward and a step back, but to keep picking up yourself and moving in the forward direction is the answer, I believe. That's what's worked for me. And there was something else, and I've lost the thread, but Kat, you really eloquently expressed a lot of the feelings that I have, and I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to share, Eleanor, before we segue into the topic of breaking through stereotypes.
I would like to thank Kat for that brilliant essay. And I want to pledge that I will explore self-love. I think I've been a bit passive with loving myself.
I think that's very common.
We're not taught to. We're not taught to love ourselves. We're taught to feel shame towards ourselves. We're taught to disregard our needs. And especially as women, we're taught our bodies are shameful. We're not pretty enough. Men are taught they're not smart enough. There's always this good and not good enough rubbish that is taught to people, and it's a lie. And self-love is important. It's not selfishness. It's not going around saying, look at me, and putting on a pouty face and taking selfies. It's not some ridiculous thing. It's getting up in the morning and stretching and drinking herbal tea, and it's saying no when you need to. It's not watching the news if it doesn't feed your soul. It's calling a friend and who you know picks you up. And when you're going on your journey to change your life, another self-loving tip is don't tell people who you know will drag you down.
Mm. That's perfect.
Only tell the people who will pick you up. Only tell the people who've got a positive mindset themselves. Be very, very selective about who you talk to about it.
I think that's very important. People, places, and things is something that I was taught years ago in terms of moving in a forward direction and not allowing myself to fall backwards. The thing I was thinking about that you touched on, Kat, was regret and how that serves no purpose other than to drag you backwards. I think that it's very important to look at whatever we perceive to have been a mistake that we could form a regret over. We have a choice to make. And what I've learned is that I need to make a choice for the better. And I'm not perfect at it by a long shot. I've got a long way to go and a lot of lessons yet to learn, hopefully. But I've said it before. I had worked with a woman who had dementia, who was a very bright person, but she tended to keep repeating herself. But one thing that she repeated that really struck me right between the eyes was that one never stops learning. And how true that is. We have learning opportunities every single minute of every day, and it's our perception of whatever we take a look at as to whether we want to paint a positive picture or a negative picture. And I heard another very wise person once say to me, is the glass half empty or half full? And I said, well, of course it's half full. You know, I'm working on being an optimistic person. And she said, well, is it really half full or is it overflowing? And I thought, well, geez, I'm limiting myself. I said, well, it's overflowing. And she said, well, can you think about it being any bigger than that? She said, perhaps your vessel's too small. And so it really is a matter of changing perspective and recognizing that we are the only ones that can limit ourselves, as I have done in my life. And I feel like I'm moving in a forward direction now after having felt regret, having felt like I have not measured up to the mark. You know, these are all illusions. And I loved what you were saying, Kat, about the illusions that you were talking with your client about. That was really strong. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, shall we talk about breaking through stereotypes? Because actually, we've already kind of done that on this topic a bit, changing our mindsets about things. Breaking through stereotypes, I think, is so important in this world that we live in. in terms of coming to a place where hopefully we will all find more peace within ourselves and with each other and come to see each other as equals instead of black and white, gay and straight, male and female, and all of those different ways that we make ourselves feel different from one another or use that as a means to feel superior or inferior to other people. So I would like to talk a little bit about that. I think that's a really important thing to consider, and that a lot of us may have some soul searching to do on that, even if we think that we have, I thought that I have recovered from a lot of my own stereotypical thinking, and I've discovered that there's always work to be done because stereotypes or prejudice are deeply ingrained in us, and I believe stereotypes result from prejudices, and that it is my life's work to integrate myself into a society, a more ideal society, and it starts with me. It's like the song that we sing in the church that I go to. It says, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me." So let's talk a little bit about this topic. What would you like to say, Kat?
Well, stereotypes are really, if somebody thinks about other people only in stereotypes or certain groups of people only in stereotypes, they're really limiting their mind to a judgmental perspective, whether that judgment is positive or negative towards the stereotype. And they're closing their mind to the truth of an individual versus a group of people. And, I mean, I can look at my own life as I've spent most of my career as a reader, so clairvoyant medium. And so the stereotype of a psychic person is that you are an airy, fairy, woo-woo person to be made a fun of because you don't have anything tangible that you think about or have to say. And everything that you have to say is to be taken with a grain of salt. And that you're just in an extremely low, you're a lowly person in society that people of all walks of life secretly come to see, but nobody acknowledges it. You're shameful is the other thing that I used to experience too. Shameful, and I was outright told by somebody, and I would like to clarify this when I finish what they said, I was outright told that a psychic is in the same status as a prostitute. Now, I would like to say that I have met plenty of prostitutes and I think that they do a service to the women of the world and I appreciate them because prostitutes give an outlet for men who are not able to get a girlfriend or a wife. And because they give an outlet to men like that, they stop a lot of these men from raping women. And that there is a huge service to the women of the world. And I adore them for that. And I appreciate them. So I, on the one hand, heard that I was this lowly person, and on the other hand, I said, well, hey, prostitutes do a massive service to us women, and I appreciate them, so I'm not going to let somebody say that a psychic is as low as a prostitute be something that affects me because I know that I help a lot of people too, and I do a service to the world. And I then rebuilt my personal image from that extremely nasty negative statement. And alongside of it, I chose to take my mind with a as a sister prostitute. I just made one up in my mind, and I said, "There's sister prostitute. I'm not going to see her as lowly, and she will hold my hand as I rise my mind into where I'm at as a psychic. I will raise her as well." And so that there was what I chose to do to change the way I thought of myself, because quite frankly, as a reader, I've had advisors to politicians who are governing come and sit with me. I've had police people come and sit with me, lawyers, scientists. I've had people who are doctors, teachers. I've had people who would be considered the highest in society come and sit at my table and ask me advice. So I cannot ever turn around and look at the face of the person who told me how low I am for the work that I do and agree that that is the case. Instead, I can only turn around and look at that person and think, well, how ignorant are you? And I'm sure that we can bust open quite a few stereotypes while we're sitting here talking about it. Do you have any that you've experienced in your life? I'm sure you have.
I certainly do. I've identified as a gay person, and there certainly are a lot of stereotypes attached to that. I viewed myself with a great deal of shame because of some of those stereotypes. I had a hard time accepting myself as gay because I'd heard things like gay people are child molesters, gay people are drag queens, and God bless drag queens, I love them, but that's not what all gay people are. And it prevented me from accepting myself because I couldn't relate to that particular aspect of gay life. I think the deepest damage was done by the church. Messages about being a sinner, being damned, those were the messages that really drove shame home for me. And so it's been a lesson in self-acceptance and coming to value myself as a worthy, dignified individual who's worthy of love, especially at the self level, because I didn't used to have very much love toward myself. And I have worked with, in my career, I've worked with murderers, rapists, prostitutes, you name it. I've seen the whole gamut of human experience out there. And there is a common bond, and it breaks through stereotypes, and that is we are all human. We're all subject to error. We all have hearts that are capable of being full or being broken. And, you know, just picking up on what you were saying about prostitutes, Kat, the prostitutes that I've known have got huge hearts. And I'm not going to belabor that, but it's just a shame, and this is a shame, that we compartmentalize people and stigmatize them because they are different from us, and it does come down to judgment. And any time that I cast a stone at somebody else, I need to take a look at something within myself that is my own insecurity. And I believe that's the case for all of us. I believe that if we are judging another person, it's because we have something within us that's unsettling about ourselves. It's our own insecurity. It's our own shit. And we do not have the right to project that onto anybody else. I'd be interested, Eleanor, if you would like to speak on the subject.
Well, all my life I've been black. And in my heart, I wish we wouldn't have labeled ourselves black people, because there's so many derogatory things that are associated with black. Bad news comes bordered in black. Black is evil in literature, etc. I wish we would have labeled ourselves African American. And try to reach out of some of the stereotypes. People don't think Black Americans are quite human. They think they're a different species. And I would not like to identify with that. But it's how I'm identified. When people see you, that's the first thing they see or notice, unless you're light-skinned and mixed race and identify white. They see you as a stereotype. And I wish that the President of the United States would have stepped out of supporting that stereotype. He didn't do very much for Black people at all, even though he was a Black man. I think that's the first stereotype people see. And the second stereotype is that I'm a woman and a full-figured woman, and I'm supposed to be loud and abrasive, a kind of mule. I'm strong. I don't want to be strong. I'm a woman. And as a woman, I want to be viewed as someone who's intelligent, but someone who needs to be given help in life. Sojourner Truth, who was an abolitionist and a minister and a mother of over 10 children, a breeder for slavery. She just bred children. And that's what she did. And she worked in the fields also when she wasn't pregnant or when she was about to deliver. Sometimes she would just lay down in the fields and deliver. And she gave a famous sermon, "Ain't I a Woman?" And people were thinking about, even today, that she's boasting about having children, and she's boasting about having to pull loads like a mule. But she's not boasting. She's saying, why should I do those kinds of things? Because that man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and need a softer life. And that's what Sojourner Truth was saying that she needed. She wasn't saying, ain't I strong, let's celebrate. She was saying, ain't I a woman, treat me as if I am a wonderful, special human being. And the stereotype of being mentally ill is one that I got out of, because a woman who's like a sister to me, and our mothers were very close, was a psychiatrist. So I got what is almost heard of. I got private care. For 3 years, I didn't leave the house almost, except at night, because I was a celebrity. I'm not a celebrity anymore. Oh, yes, occasionally people recognize me, but I can walk down the street and have peace of mind. Well, back when I was first diagnosed, I couldn't walk down the street without being recognized. I went to Hutchings once with my psychiatrist, and they said, well, Eleanor Russell is here. They announced it and everything. And people were let out of their wards to come and speak to me. The whole hospital opened up. Well, I go to Hutchings now, and nobody recognizes me. So time changes things. But it wasn't like that when I was first diagnosed. I would have lost my legacy. And my legacy was all I cared about. And I have my legacy. I'll always be Ellie on the Magic Toy Shop with people in their 40s. I'll always be Ellie who advocated for children. People in their 40s will always remember me as Ellie. And Ellie was protected. I don't know how we get over stereotypes except to be as compassionate as my mother and father were. They always let people of different races and backgrounds into our home to have dinner with us. And they always went to other people's churches. There were churches that didn't want us to worship at their church home. And these were black churches as well as white churches. They wanted nothing to do with us because we were radical. And we finally found one church that wanted to identify with us. And that's when I started hearing about stereotypes. I was going to give up and compromise my program because in church, a minister preached a sermon against my best friend and I at the time. And he said we were trying to be men. That was a great insult to anyone that would try to be a different gender when I was growing up. And I went home. I was brokenhearted. And I said to myself, well, I'm not going to do this anymore because he's displeased with us. Such a powerful man is displeased with us. And I went downstairs and I looked at my mother, and she was wearing an afro, which is you can't tell afros now today because people have all kinds of weird hairstyles. But black women didn't go out of the house without their hair done when I was a teenager. You just didn't do that. And it was considered a great insult. And my mother had one of these hairdos on. She had joined me in my struggle. And I will always be grateful to my parents for how much they supported the community and my little teenage group.
Well, Eleanor, you really shared from the heart, and I appreciate it. And you provided an answer to a question I was going to ask you when you said that you didn't know what the answer was. I thought that the answer you gave was wonderful, and compassion, I think, is a big answer to breaking through stereotypes and through achieving a kinder, gentler world. And so thank you so much for participating tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and you're welcome to tune in anytime. We'd always enjoy your input. For now, we're going to close with a meditation, and I'm going to just pause for a minute because there's an electronic lady that you can't hear that is distracting to me, and she's going to announce the 60-second mark. So I would just like to remind people that we are on the air every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and in Australia, where Kat is, we are on at 10 a.m. Monday mornings. And with that said, I'd like you to close your eyes or fix your eyes on a spot in the room and just start to breathe deeply. Breathe in slowly to the count 1001, 1002, 1003. Hold, breathe out, 1, 2, 3, let go, and repeat 3 more times. Now I want you to imagine yourself sitting in the body that you occupy today, and your mind such as it is at this moment in time. Perhaps you're feeling more hopeful. Perhaps you have a better feeling for yourself. Perhaps you're confused. Perhaps you don't know how you're feeling. And that's okay. That's okay. But I'd ask you to break down a wall. Tear it down if you need to. Break down a wall to a time in your life when you were filled with wonder, when you were filled with optimism and hope and an inner knowing that magic was in the air, that you could achieve whatever it was that you wanted to achieve, and that you believed that when you wished upon a star, your dreams would come true. And so sit with that image for a while, sit with those feelings for a while, and just allow them to permeate your being. At whatever point in your life you're at, you know within yourself that anything is possible. Anything is possible. That you are inherently good, that you have power to change your life, change your destiny, and recognize a life beyond your wildest dreams. And so with that feeling inside yourself, bring it forward to this moment in time, such as we perceive it, and remember and recognize that you possess the power to have that childlike wonder, to have that firm belief in yourself at any point that you so choose. Just tear down the wall again and go back in time and then come forward and know that all is well. And so now, when you're ready, open your eyes and know within yourself that all is well in your world and within you. And so with that said, I wish you all good night. God bless. And we'll look forward to joining you again next week at the same time. Good night and God bless.